Hey, hi, I'm Bonnie. Welcome to this podcast, Make Joy Normal, where we chat about homeschooling and family life. With my co-hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, we address your questions and topics in a way that can create more joy in our lives. Please submit any questions you have by email or voice message in the links in the show notes. If you found this episode valuable, please share it with a friend, like, or leave us a review. That's how we get the word out. Thanks for trying to make joy normal in your own life. Good afternoon to all my dear listeners. I have one of my dearest friends on the whole planet here with me because of her four daughters, she has one just starting high school. So Ashley, could you just quickly introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your family?
Hi, I'm Ashley. So pleased to be here. Yes, I have four daughters, and my eldest is Seraph, and she is 14. She's going into grade 9. And I just, even though I've been homeschooling since she first started kindergarten, I feel like a brand new homeschool mom all over again. And I need to start at the beginning of what am I doing and why am I doing it? Why are we choosing homeschooling? And I know there's so many options now opening up to her. You know, we can do cross enrollment. We have to think about graduation requirements and dogwood or not dogwood. And looking down the road for her future and how to best prepare her for the world. And yeah, it all seems really new again.
It is, yeah. And those, you know, the questions you're asking are awesome questions because they're really the questions we should be asking every single school year, right? Or anytime we're feeling kind of like, you know, the pinch is on or whatever, we're, you know, overwhelmed or whatever. Those are great questions. So Ashley and I have already had some conversation about sort of high school. And so we're sort of jumping into the conversation about developing a high school transcript. In BC, the high school graduation certificate is called the dogwood because that's our provincial flower. So we have the option of doing the dogwood or not doing the dogwood as homeschoolers. You're not required to do it. None of my kids have a dogwood. I don't really care about the piece of paper. What they all have is a high school transcript that would look pretty similar to a dogwood transcript anyways. So that's sort of where we're jumping into the conversation. So how do you broach that conversation with your child, and how do you kind of keep track of how do you develop a transcript? And for me, this was a massive learning curve. So the high school transcript that I do, I have a one on my website under resources that, or freebies or something like that, that you can print off the transcript and fill it out by hand, which is what I've done. But there are some lovely Etsy ones that you can buy for like $2 or $3 and you fill them out yourself. So they're all typed out and they look very pro. So mine looks pro, except that you have to fill it in by hand. These ones are editable, right? So I would recommend that if you wanted to, you know, look top notch, but you got a long way to go before you go in, get into a transcript, right? So the planning pages I have are 7 pages that you would print out for each year. So I take those 7 pages. I started in grade 9 as a practice year. So then the first set of 7 and the, you know, for grade 9, 10, 11, and 12, right? So those 4 pages technically on your transcript, most places only require 10, 11, 12, but if they require 9, you have it. And also it's just a great practice year. So it's good. It's a good year to start. Print off the pages, put them all in one Duotang or binder so that you can fill them out as you're doing things. So under the different subject areas in the planning pages, you want to put down basically everything they do. You know, you've already said like she's a hard worker. Getting her to get her work done isn't the problem by the sounds of it. Because for some teens it is. That's getting them actually do stuff, right? It doesn't sound like that's her issue.
Well, it was actually in the past, but she something has shifted with her. She's become she's all of a sudden become a complete bookworm. She can read really quickly and retain information really well, and so that's making everything easier. Her weakness has always been skill development, so writing, math, even reading early on, because she's very intelligent and skills work is gradual and it doesn't come faster. Doesn't come faster just if you're, you know, a smart kid. You still have to do the work to develop the skills. Yeah, some of that's coming along. And in her attitude, she has a
Exactly.
really positive attitude.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it is fantastic. I mean, I'm really excited to see how these next years go.
So, I mean, definitely, I would say, especially if, for your first, it's so nice to have positive attitude because it really trickles down, right? But I would say start with a conversation. You know, what? Here's what a dogwood would look like. Here's what not getting your dogwood would look like. Here's, you know, a self-developed transcript. In some places, like in Ontario, you actually only have the option of doing your own transcript. There's no other option available to you. And, you know, those kids, those homeschooled kids are still getting into college and university, you know, or trade schools or whatever it is that, you know, wherever it is you
They
want to
want
take
to
them, right?
do.
Yeah. So it's not limiting them. So it's a great place to start. And I find that kids really respond well to having input and control and trust of you so that you can sort of in a mature way develop their transcript yourself, right? So if you look up your sort of local provincial or state graduation requirements, that's really helpful to sort of, okay, these are the things we're going to need in order to have a university or college accept that. Not that, you know, it's a given that you're going to go to university or college, but you don't want to close that door for them either, or make it that they have to do an extra year or two to kind of catch up on things that they might have had. Although some kids will say, you know what, all I really want to do is study music and English. You know, I just see myself going that direction, and I can't see myself in post-secondary. I just want to be an artist. I want to be a musician or whatever. And I just sort of see myself going that direction. Then you need to be able to say to them, okay, listen, that's a great idea. I fully support what you want to do. But just so that we're both aware, and we want to tuck this in our transcript somewhere, that we've opted to do this instead, and that it might mean that if you change your mind in the future, we need to get the math 11, we need to get the English 12, we need to, you know, whatever it is we need to do, that will be part of the program in order to get into university. And I would tuck that in your transcript. I would also say, even if they're totally like, no, I just want to do a totally unschooling kind of thing, I want to do my own thing, I want to, you know, teach myself essentially. And some kids are very, you know, incredible that way and very motivated, and probably in some ways getting a much richer and better education than they otherwise would in any kind of top-down situation. They, you know, need to know that sort of what the flip side of that would look if they change their mind, because it's also a period of change. But I would also write everything down that they do, because you can start to create courses from your high school transcript. So I like to use some examples. But say, for example, you say she loved repairing bikes. Okay. And she repaired her own bike, and she got it, you know, was sort of mechanically inclined, and she loved to watch YouTube videos on repairing her bike. And maybe she takes a little bike repair course. That you sort of start to notice is, boy, she's really spending a lot of time doing this. I think that we have a, you know, a shop course developing here, and that maybe we need to talk about that. Like, you're spending a lot of hours watching YouTube videos, instructing yourself. You've taken this course. So maybe she has, you know, 15 hours in a course she took, and 25 hours in YouTube videos that she watched, and 50 hours of kind of practical application that she's actually doing it to her own bike, that suddenly you're at enough hours that you could start looking at a course, right? So maybe you say, you know what, I think if you maybe wrote an essay, or did like an educational board or some kind of presentation on fixing bikes and what you've learned and what you could pass on to others, that we could call this bike repair. And there's so many things in our life that we can do that with. We can either take, say, she takes a babysitting course, right? That babysitting course or driving course or whatever, that those courses can either be added on to any kind of life skills course, including things like, you know, health, phys ed courses, things like that. That there's some aspects of that, you know, because they're learning some first aid, because they're that could be added onto a phys ed course, or if they're really interested in that particular topic, they could actually start building a course out of something that they're really interested in. Right. So these are things that, in a sense, when we're doing a program, can get lost. Because A, you don't have the time because you're on a screen, you know, doing all your stuff, but also they can get lost in the shop, in the kind of the busyness of just trying to keep up with the classwork that is required of doing a program. So that's one of the beautiful things about kind of being able to manage your own thing. But then I really feel really strongly that they kind of need to make that decision, right? And it's not carved in stone. Like say they say, you know, I'd really rather not do a dogwood. A year from now, if they think, yeah, no, I think I'd rather just do the dogwood. I'm hearing other people talk about it and it seems like they're enjoying it and whatever. No, I'm just going to do that. And, you know, I might have a bit of catch up, right? Nothing's carved in stone with education. You have to be able to just allow her kind of the knowledge and understanding of that this is fluid. There's fluidity here that we can work with and you can change your mind. You don't have to decide this minute that you want to do your dogwood or not do your dogwood. You may change your mind. Right. So obviously if you're going to do the dogwood, it's better to just kind of jump in and start and power through it, knowing you can change your mind, but rather than having to sort of catch up on the other end.
That, I mean, that's what I've been saying to myself, is that maybe it's better to just jump in and try it out. And then if she really hates it, if it doesn't work for our family, you know, like starting in rather than starting out. Because if you start out and then you decide you want to opt in, there's the catch up or whatever. But, you know, your whole your whole bigger picture view of education is a big part of why I wanted to talk with you again at this important moment in my family life. Because I think that, yeah, it's very education is one of these things that's held really opposite of fluidly. It's held so there's so much emotional baggage attached, and there's so much fear attached, and people are used to education being prepackaged and lockstep. It's very intimidating when you step away from that. Yeah, your philosophy of you just breathe air into it. you make me feel like it is flexible and we can.
Well, and I think that it's doable and viable. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, ultimately just more fun. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, if any of my kids had opted to do, just to backtrack, I'm not sure if we recorded that part, but, you know, I gave my kids the option of doing the dogwood or not doing the dogwood. Mm-hmm. Over the years, how that looks has changed because we've been homeschooling for a long time. Mm-hmm. So in the early years, it wasn't like it is now, where basically you're required to do screen classes and, you know, high schoolers are spending a lot of time on their screen.
Yeah.
And do you want to spend 4 or 5 hours a day doing courses on a screen? That just sounds so unattractive to me. Again, very kid dependent. If any of my kids said, yes, it's really important to me to do my dogwood, I would have supported them in that. You know, the one thing I can't do is the work, but I would have continued homeschooling the rest of my family in the same way. Yeah. If there were connection points, that would have been great. I suspect there wouldn't have been. That was something we really highly valued, was reading together as a family and, you know, those sort of one-on-one and family-centered activities that my high schoolers got to participate at in their whole life. We always read together until they were gone. I think that if they had opted for other paths, they wouldn't have had that. And that's okay. The one thing I can't do is the work, right? That's what they have to do. You know, I would have been happy to support them how I could have. That might have been tutoring. That might have been, you know, however, I'm not sure how that would look. Yeah. But I wasn't going to sort of drag my whole family into we're now doing school on a screen, right? That just could not, I could not live with that decision.
No. No, and that sort of isolation that's required, that's what I'm sort of pulling back from. And that's what, like you said, it just sounds really unattractive on a lot of levels for our whole family life and for Seraph in particular. Like, you know, the idea of her, you know, we're all going to go out to the lake because, you know, it's April or May and it's nice and we're going to do our homeschool out there for the day. But there's not Wi-Fi, so you're going to have to stay home and be on your computer.
Yeah, it really alters family.
And I wonder, there's still benefits. There's still greater flexibility probably than being in a brick and mortar school. And there's more safety emotionally and physically and whatnot. But I wonder if it would make her want to just throw in the towel in terms of homeschooling and ask to go to school, because, you know, it's not like you're really homeschooling. It's like you're just distance schooling. You're just,
Exactly. You're computer schooling. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I know you've talked to a couple of people who have older kids. I've known a lot of people too, who start off, they need the dogwood, this, and by the time they get down to the younger kids, it's like, why did I put myself through that? Right. Why did we, it just altered our family life too much. So I want to make different choices and then have made different choices. Right. So I think that it's a safety, it feels safe, you know, and we want to stay safe. We want to be safe. Right. It feels safe to kind of just do what is the norm, and you know, bearing in mind that the norm has changed drastically with every decade the human beings have lived, and that public education or private education even have been a thing, but you know, every decade, every century is just vastly different from the previous one. So what's normal isn't going to be normal 10 years from now, or whatever, right? And the whole face of education, I think even post-secondary, we'll see some pretty radical changes in the next 20 years, I think, because nobody can, most people can't afford to go to university, right? They don't want to come out with $150,000 of debt. So something's got to change, right? And whatever that is, you know, I don't know, but I think we're going to see some pretty drastic changes as people want to figure out how to buy homes and how to, you know, live a life without massive amounts of debt, right? So I think that what I've tried to do is make resources, because I had to do it for myself, right? Is to provide resources for others that make, I'm using the term off the grid, meaning off the grid of the educational norms, which are not actually norms, but they're norms right now, today, off to today's off the grid norms that make it feel safer to homeschool your kid and feel like you're still giving them a really good education, right? So I think that that's something we just need to be really aware of, that there are places we can go. And I'm hope that, you know, I hope that what I provide, both verbally provide and also with the resources that I've created for myself that I'm passing on, that those things can help people to feel like it's a safer decision to just move forward doing what you would love to do as opposed to what you feel you have to do, right? Right. Does that kind of make sense?
Yes, it does. There's the dogwood, and that's like your graduation. Isn't there like a grade 12 equivalent, or like a adult graduation or something some homeschoolers do as well?
The adult equivalency is something that I think they have to be a certain age, like 20, to do that. As far as I know, I don't know much about it because none of my kids ever did it, because the transcript wasn't a problem. So, so handing in our homeschool transcript just didn't pose any problems. So we just kept to that path, right? But yeah, you can do equivalency. At what age you can do it, I'm not sure. Maybe you need to have been out of school for a year or 2 years or something like that. And there may be other options as well. I'm not super up to date on what our local options are for that. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And I also heard that just recently, I could have this wrong because it sounds crazy to me, but I heard it, Seraph's godfather is a teacher, and he was saying that they are not doing provincial exams anymore.
I heard that too. Yeah.
So then is there just no standardized high school testing?
Apparently that's something that is just going by the wayside. And I don't know why. I don't know what the philosophy behind that is. You know, maybe they're just not an accurate picture of what a person's actually capable of. Some people are very up in arms in it about it, you know, that no, it's absolutely essential to have some sort of standardized testing. And some people are like, finally, that took a while to get there. You know, a person's classwork and regular quizzes or tests or whatever that they have in class are more indicative of what they're capable of or whatever.
A better indication.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. And then, another question for you is, how do you come up with your grades for your different courses? Yeah. I sort of understand what you're saying about, it's kind of foreign to me as someone who's homeschooled the whole way, that concept of like, okay, look for what could be a course
percentage. Yeah.
Okay. So now if this is a course, then how do you come up? Like if go back to the bike thing, if she was fixing her bike and watching YouTube videos, she does a project? I mean, would you say that it's important to each course to do either an essay or a some kind of presentation or project to sort of tie it together and make it more of a course?
I think it's not essential, but I think it's a very good way of first of all, you know, bringing kind of writing, because when you speak, present, you have to write, right? Or an essay, you have to write, of course. That I think it's a very good way of making, because, you know, our whole life should be whole, right? Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, when you think about like the whole idea of grammar, logic, rhetoric, right? When we have to present about something that we've delved into, we both have to take in information, take the information and do something with it, and then take mm-hmm. the information as a whole person and share it with others, right? That's kind of looking at the whole thing as a beautiful kind of package of the wholeness of humanness. Not saying this very well, if you know what I mean. But you mm-hmm. you take in, you do, you share, right?
Yeah.
I think that that's important for us. Now, that could just be, it doesn't have to be a formal presentation. That could just be, you know what, she shows her siblings how to change the chain on her bike, right? She shows her friends how to milk a cow. You know, there's some aspect of sharing information, right? Because the whole of learning mm-hmm. should also be about sharing, right? It's not, we shouldn't be keeping it to ourselves, especially as Christians, you know, that just having it in your head, like that's a part of learning, but it's not the whole of learning. Sharing brings it full circle, right? So I would say find some way of sharing that in, mm-hmm. in whatever capacity, you know, you or she is open to. A course is somewhere between about 100 and 120 hours. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're talking about hours. Now, some courses are going to be much more instruction heavy. For example, you're in a math class, you're getting some instruction every day. So you're getting a lot of time of instruction.
Interesting.
And then you're getting practice time. Okay. You're getting very little project time, mm-hmm. sharing time. Mm-hmm. Math is one of those things. And I think that for a math course to be valuable, that there should be kind of a sharing component. Now, I had interesting sort of, some of my kids were really interested in kind of sharing just what they learned with me, right? Oh, look at this. I figured out mm-hmm. how to do this, you know, geometric formula. Yeah. I figured out how this particular aspect of algebra works. So, you know, I want to share that with you or with their sibling or whatever. But, you know, even doing a presentation on math is kind of a cool idea, right? But then there's other courses, say like music, where there's very mm-hmm. little instructional time and most of it is practical application. Say, for example, you have your 1 hour a week music lesson mm-hmm. and then you practice for your 45 minutes or an hour a day. Practice is an important part of it. And then you have your, you know, maybe you do a recital at the end of the year. So you have some presentation or you do a theory project or whatever. You have your sort of presentation or theory time. Mm-hmm. that you're sharing with others. A course that 100, 120 hours is meaningful in many different ways. So some of it's going to be direct instruction. Some of it's going to be practice. Some of it's going to be hands-on learning. Some of it's going to be project oriented, right? Like sharing oriented. I have a video on YouTube, I believe, where I go into this really in depth and I'll look it up. I have a couple of high school YouTube videos, so that might be really helpful so that you have kind of some more information on this that you could look at.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then grading. So how do you do grading?
Yeah, it's a great question. So say for example, she's doing bikes, mm-hmm. you know, let's just stay with that example because we already used it. So part of grading for some classes, mm-hmm. grading, a lot of the grading is going to be participation, mm-hmm. right? How well is this person participating in the class, mm-hmm. right? How well are they tracking the information that they receive, right? Mm-hmm. How enthusiastically and accurately do they present the information to somebody else? So some of it very much could be, you could come up with your own sort of little marking program, like, and you could have areas like enthusiasm, accuracy, time put in, presentation, and then under presentation you could have was the grammar and spelling correct? Was the presentation enthusiastic? Was she clear? You know, you could sort of break it down as though you were judging something on a somebody on their speech. You could develop your own little course specific guideline. Just, it would be short. There might be, say, 4 or 5 different things that you kind of give them points on, and that's how you come up with your final score. So maybe there's 5 different areas of 20. You know, and they, you know, maybe 20th enthusiasm, it's a 20. The presentation could have used a little more polish. Again, as homeschoolers, we're going to make it a 20. We're going to say, you know what, let's see your presentation as it is. And, mm-hmm. you know, it needs to be, the spelling needs to be correct. Your grammar needs to be correct. You need to project well. You need to have good hand gestures. I want you to not be sort of tapping your fingers. I want your project mm-hmm. to be well presented. So we're going to keep working on that. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't do it perfectly, but we're going to get them as close to mastery as we can, because that's what you do as a yeah. homeschooler, right? Yeah. Mastery matters. So some of that, I feel very confident in developing a marking system myself. Okay. If there was some mm-hmm. other topic, say for example, English, you could get a program for them where they're just doing English mm-hmm. and there might be a marking system within that program. Mm-hmm. If you're very sort of, that was one of the areas that I mostly did myself, but I'd had a lot of sort of Andrew Pudua training. And so I felt like I was competent to grade their essay to say, okay, here's where you, and again, I want it to be as close to perfect as they're capable of doing, because I want mastery. So, you know, you've misspelled these words, so let's work on that. This paragraph could be structured more concisely. If I felt not confident, I would either get somebody who I felt was competent to look at it, a friend, a colleague, whatever, or I might take it to a high school teacher and just say, you know what, I just want some feedback on this. What can you tell me? And they're going to rewrite, you know, they're going to do, this is their first draft, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that, I guess that's the thing, is that having gone to public school all my life, it sounds a bit like cheating.
Yes, exactly. No, and it's not.
You know, like, you hand it in, and if you got some of that spelling wrong, and you got yeah. some of those, and those paragraphs were not concise, you had some grammar errors, then you should get that 70%, exactly. and you should just gonna have to sit with that for the rest of your life, that you got a 70% in English 11, because you didn't do as good a job as you should have the first time, you know, and I don't see education that way.
Exactly. And in college, university, if you handed in an essay or a project that you hadn't got somebody to go over for you, mm-hmm. like to edit for you or to give you suggestions on, that would look irresponsible. But in high school, nobody says, you don't give it to one of your friends, give me your first draft, let's go over it together. Like, learning is coaching. So if you hand in an essay that your teacher just says, yeah, hand in your final essay, you know, final, mm-hmm. I just want to see your final copy, and nobody has ever set eyes on it, mm-hmm. that's like a test, right? That's not
yeah,
coaching.
It is.
That's not learning. That's not teaching. Right?
Yeah.
That's just bad educational philosophy, right?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. But then, so then I work with them on it, and we look at why it's not working, and we fix it all up, and then I grade it and I give them full marks because it's just perfect. But then they go to write another essay and they can't produce that level of a cohesive, concise, grammatically correct, spelling correct, on their own. And like you said, the part of the learning is you don't have to work in a vacuum. Find somebody to look it over for you. Understand that a first draft is not what you hand in.
Exactly. But also you're coaching, right? And so yeah. as you're doing that coaching, then you're saying, okay, so here's how you could get this paragraph to be more concise or be more clear. You know, here's mm-hmm. how you need to develop a topic sentence. Here's how you need to kind of have your last sentence reflect back and kind of complete this thought. I'm just going to say this as an aside. I probably don't need to say this to yes. you, but before you ever go into essays, a person should be absolutely have a paragraph down that they could write a paragraph with their eyes closed, right? That's easy. Writing a paragraph is easy before you start into essays, right? And that something that you just do over and over and over again over the course of a year or a couple of years, you just work on your paragraph, you produce maybe one paragraph a week. That's a very low commitment, right? You do one paragraph a week. And yet, if you've spent your whole school year doing one paragraph a week, you know how to write a paragraph, right? So, because you can't write an essay if you haven't nailed a paragraph, right? So even if that's not something you've done, you know, start now, right?
Right, yeah. It's very subjective, you know, marking. That's that's the thing, is it's hard to feel confident to just write down a number, because I'm like,
I think that you need to be taking into consideration the different aspects of whatever the topic is. And there are many programs like math, for example, or science, where there's quizzes that are inherent in the program. So you know, you just add those up at the end of the year and you have your final mark, right? So you could do a final test if you wanted, but you have all the, you know, cumulative tests and quizzes throughout the program, right? And again, I would do study guides with my kids. I didn't expect them to take a test without, we'd go through the study guide, we would do it over and over again. If they didn't feel confident or they got half of them wrong, I would say, you know what, spend some time on it this week, we'll do the study guide again, right? We'll do some, I'll sort of do some pop questions off of it or whatever. And, you know, if you take this test, you might get 70 on it. But if you did another week, you might get 80. So it's up to you. You don't have to do, you don't have to be an A student in everything. Say, for example, you need to do, they're not a science-y person, they're not a math person. If you pass, that's okay. That it's never going to be what you're doing. If you get a decent mark and you're decently equipped to go on to the next grade, you know, so 60, no, you're not decently equipped, but 75, 80, yeah, you probably are. But does it need to be 100% on things that they just kind of need to grit their teeth and get through, what they want to pour their heart and soul into, the things that they really, really love? Of course, everything they do that they really, really love, they're going to be an A student because that's what they want, right? So some things are subjective, some things are not. I would say if you lack confidence in one particular area, that you ask somebody who's either another homeschool mom who's done, you know, traveled this road, or a friend who's a teacher, and just say, this is the project I'm getting them to do, you know, could you have a look at it, right? Or could you do some coaching with me or with them, depending on what your child is. You know, some kids would be really comfortable. They'd love to have another teacher see what they do. You know, they'd really get jazzed about that. Some kids would say, no, I would like you to show it to them and give some feedback that way, right? So subjective, but also you have to remember that marking is always subjective. So a teacher,
yeah,
is subjectively marking your essay, right? They might have particular things that they really, really love. Like some teachers, they just want to make sure you've ticked all the boxes on a structure of an essay. They don't care if your word choice is excellent. They don't care if you've made an excellent argument. What they care about is you've ticked all the boxes. Some teachers are going to be there, you know, there might be the odd grammar or typo, spelling mistake, but you've made an excellent argument. You've supported your points really well. And that's what's going to get you the good mark. They're going to point out to you, of course, your errors, but they might give you a really good mark based on the solidness of your argument in a persuasive essay or whatever, right? So there's always subjectiveness. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And any of the, you know, areas that you're feeling.
That's true. That's a good point. Oh, boy.
Ashley, I would just pull back and start by having the conversation. I mean, you've got, you know, I mean, I know the beginning of the school week is technically next week, but that doesn't matter. I mean, if you started 2 weeks from now, but with some really good conversation with Sarah, right, about what that's going to look like, and not to talk her into anything, because that was never my goal with my own kids. Like, I will support you, whatever you choose. I just want you to know the difference of what this will look like, what that will look like, what this will get you. Because I think it's so important at 14, 15 that they start being able to really be, have a voice in their own education. We never had that. It was ridiculous, right? I mean, we had a little bit of choice within a very narrow selection, but you know, we want to be heard. We want a voice. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of the ways that we can say, even, you know, we would talk about food as a family, like, I don't like this food or whatever, you know, okay, tell me, we have to eat healthy. That's important. What would you like to see different? Mm-hmm. What would be fun for you? What would be interesting? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm happy to take a look at some different kind of foods. You like ethnic foods? You know, we could take a look at that within the large scope of healthy foods that are available to us, within all the beautiful things we could study. Mm-hmm. What matters? You know, what matters to you? Where's your heart? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, another whole area is how the family life functions, how everyone's individual tasks of the day. Yeah. Where do we all come together? How does the rhythm of the day go? How does it feel? Do I feel like I'm micromanaging every single minuscule thing that has to happen for every single person that lives under this roof? And I'm ticking every box for every child from the second they get up to the second they're all asleep again. And it becomes a grind. So the high school.
Is that how you're saying it has been, or are you concerned?
Last year felt like that. And it was very frustrating. But I'm going into this next stage with Seraph. Right. And the education piece is going to be a bit more demanding, both on her and on me, to just ensure that she's getting adequately prepared. Like you said, not closing doors. But it also, I guess what made me think of it is when you're talking about that freedom and having a voice. And one of the things that I felt that the being in public education really did not prepare me for managing my own time, managing the tasks of regular day-to-day life. Because you're leaving me on a bell.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. That's again something that's so beautiful to watch your kids grow and develop in. And sometimes, you can say to them, okay, here's what I'd like to be reading to you guys. We can all gather whenever that's, you know. So if you can manage your time around that, I'm happy to help you. Or you can manage your own time. It's totally up to you. But we might need to reassess. So after maybe a month of you sort of managing your own time, you know, do you find you're falling behind? Like I had some kids who were very good at managing their own time. Some of them needed a little more support and coaching. Right? That's not a flaw. It's not a personality flaw. That's just that, okay, they don't have that particular natural skill set. So, okay, how are we going to manage your time better? You know, maybe it means you go through your math book and you say, okay, ideally I'm finished this by the end of October. So break it down into sort of more bite-sized chunks, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you're getting to halfway through the year and it's been slow going, you know what? We're going to, part of this book, we're going to have to carry over to next year. And that's okay. Right? That's not a problem. It's one of the gifts we have as homeschooling. I'd rather you master this and take longer, right? Or maybe you fly through it. And there's different ways you can do things too. Like you could take that you're say only do two subjects, depending on the style of learning your kid has, where, okay, for the next 3 months, we're going to power through this science book and this, you know, maybe it's a book on economics or, you know, whatever. We're going to power through these. That's how I learn best. I would just want to plow through it and spend 2-3 hours a day on these two topics and then go on to my next subjects. Some kids work better that way.
Yeah, that's what I've been wondering too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been really wondering that as well.
Yeah. And so those
it's hard to know.
It's those are sort of part of the learning curve, right? And there's different ways we can approach it. Like, say, for example, have you chosen curricula for this coming year?
I've got her math and her science. And I was thinking that with her language arts, she's really into language arts type stuff. There's going to be a bit more variety. I was looking at the Mater Amabilis suggestions again, and there's like there's a lot. So yes and no, basically. Yes and no. Some of the ones that I'm less confident in doing, or that I feel are more, you know, yes, the science, I've chosen something, the math, I've chosen something that's sort of you know, you're going to get through this in the year.
Yeah, I would suggest that you go on my resource page under freebies and print off the high school grade 9, just print off the NAEP grade 9 for the time being, and sort of get kind of have it around. So you kind of get used to it, show it to her, show her kind of different things that you can do. Like you have till September 30th to actually register. Right. So if you were, you know, thinking of jumping in, but just have a look at it, kind of get a feel for it. I also have elementary school pages, planning pages that are meant for people who have a more organic approach to education, right? So, yeah. You know, you might want to have a look at those too, if you felt like, you know, you're constantly sort of checking. And then I have a couple of blog posts on how those work. So that's something that, you know, might be helpful. But why don't we sort of have another conversation, maybe, I don't know, in a couple of weeks and sort of see where you're at, you know.
I mean, I feel like I'm ready to jump in.
But I would say really important to have a conversation with her.
Yes. And I mean, I did somewhat. I wasn't as confident to tell her whether she could get into, you know, if she's wanting to apply for university afterwards. I wasn't very confident in terms of whether or not they're going to require a dogwood. And you feel quite confident that it's not a problem to get into university without a dogwood.
Well, I've had six do it so far.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Right. And, you know, they all went to the college, you know, the Seat of Wisdom, the Catholic College, for 1 year, but they were accepted at other places without going to the college first. But again, average is okay, right? This doesn't have to be, you know, the stellar GPA, right? Depending on what it is they want to do or what program they want to get into. Okay, well, it's been lovely to chat with you. Love you to pieces, and we will talk again.
Hopefully. That sounds awesome. Love you lots, Bonnie. Okay.